This is the Mother Jones Podcast. I'm Jamila King in Oakland. On today's show, we have actor, activist, author, Diane Guerrero. You might know her as Maritza from Orange is the New Black.
If you want more pizza, vote for Maritza.
As Crazy Jane from Doom Patrol.
I know who you are, you're Cyborg.
Or Lena from Jane the Virgin.
You little liar.
But you might not know that this TV star is also a longtime immigration activist whose own parents were detained and deported by U.S. immigration when she was just 14 years old. Diane Guerrero. It's an uplifting, surprising conversation that left a smile on my face. I have a feeling it'll do the same for you. Stick around. Diane Guerrero has never been afraid to use her platform to have important political conversations. For years, she's used rallies, appearances, interviews, protests, and her books to address immigrant rights, voting rights, and representation on screen. So we leapt at the chance to interview Diane for our series of live-streamed events at Mother Jones. And last week, it all came together, broadcast to our audiences on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. My name is Fernanda Echavarri.
Our immigration reporter, Fernanda Echavarri, and Diane chatted about DACA.
Of course, it was a relief to hear the Supreme Court decision.
Asylum, COVID-19, the uprising, and the for-profit immigration detention complex. Here's Fernanda.
Diane is an actor, activist, and author, and overall super cool person. So I'm very excited that you're joining us, Diane. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I was going to say welcome to you too, but yes, welcome to us.
So you've been quarantined here in LA?
The whole time. The whole time. Yeah, the whole time. I've been here. I was finishing up shooting my show Doom Patrol in Atlanta, and suddenly the world was different and we were all suffering from a health crisis. And so I came straight here, and I'm so aware of my privilege to be home and that I'm safe. So I feel good.
Diane, if you want to just go ahead and get started, we can start by talking about the recent Supreme Court decision on DACA. Just a quick refresher for our audience. DACA is a program that President Obama started in 2012 that protects young immigrants from temporary deportation and gives them a work permit. And about 700,000 people in the U.S. currently have that program. Since Trump took office, he decided he was going to dismantle it. It's been through many, many hearings in different courts. And the Supreme Court finally ruled against the Trump administration last week, saying that what he did and the decision to end it was arbitrary and capricious. So, Diane, I want to hear from you about sort of why DACA has been so important for the immigrant rights movement and what this decision means for so many people.
Well, first, I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the activists, the people who are and have been on the ground making this possible. Making sure that our stories are heard, making sure that they're out there protesting, demanding rights, and letting the world know that they are here to stay unapologetically. And that has been wonderful to see, that kind of self-governance, that type of action from folk that is actually a part of our Constitution, that is part of the very fabric of this nation. So I applaud those young people who have been out there time and time and again, making sure that our community is heard. Of course, it was a relief to hear the Supreme Court decision. Obviously, 700,000 DACA recipients are safe for now, but we need a permanent solution. We need to dismantle oppressive institutions like ICE. We've seen protection for now, but we also would like to see that protection for the 11 million undocumented folks in this country that consider this country their home.
Yeah, I think you mentioned sort of how this is a for now solution, and there's been also so much that can be done outside of those who qualify for DACA, for the parents of DACA recipients, and for people who do not fall in those categories. And to your point about the people who are going out on the streets and who have protested, I mean, we know that DACA was a result of all that pressure. I mean, Obama didn't just sit down and write DACA because he wanted to. It was so many people who took to the streets and protested and demanded some sort of protection. I guess that can kind of relate a little bit to what we're seeing on the protests right now. There's so many people who have taken to the streets, and we have seen small, tiny gains here and there in different cities and what people are reacting to. So I know you've been very active in the protests and the Black Lives Matter movement and the anti-police brutality actions. So I'm curious, what has been something that really struck you as far as the meaningfulness of this moment and the protest, or maybe a particular anecdote from when you've gone out there, or anything that you that has really sort of moved you?
I think right now is something that is very clear to me, is that our movements are tied, right? That my freedom is tethered to that of Black freedom. I've had to look at myself and how I have benefited from whiteness, and evaluate that and my role in all of this, and how important it is for me to not, you know, when I say that my freedom is tied to Black freedom, or our people's freedom is tied to Black freedom, that's not making sure that I'm not discounting the already 25% of Latinx that identify Black. Mm-hmm. And so my work has expanded. I've also had an awakening that it is not enough not to be racist. I have to actively do anti-racist work within my own community as well, and making sure that I'm uplifting Black Latinx voices and in connection to the Black community.
I just want to follow up about sort of what specifically do you see as something that you've benefited from when it comes to whiteness?
Well, I mean, growing up, all the representation that I saw in my house from watching telenovelas or any Latin newscaster or media outlet, all looked like me and then whiter. Racism in our community plagues us as well. I was constantly reminded that I was, you know, the image of what Latinx looks like, or Latinx representation, when I know simply that that is not true. And so, and of course, that, you know, we learn, and we're all victim to this, is that the lighter you are, the more value you have. It is an incredible disservice. It's also a tool that has been used to divide us. Just the fact that, you know, us as Latinx are not considered a race. We're considered an ethnicity. And so if we are out there identifying, you know, able to identify as Black, able to identify as Indigenous, able to identify as white, then it's going to be hard to really, as a collective, fight for one common goal, which is our liberation, which is tied directly to the liberation of our Black siblings.
The more güerita, the better is a message that was sadly fed to me my entire life growing up in Mexico. I didn't learn anything but good things about the Spanish colonizers. And I think that this is a moment for all of us to really sort of look at our own communities, look at our tías and tíos and the people who have sort of fed this to us, because it's been fed to them. And we just, it's our moment to stop that from getting to the younger generations of Latinos.
We have to actively educate ourselves. We have to unlearn the colonizer's language. We have to unlearn all these notions of whiteness that honestly are used against us, right? And we need to see how that has been to our detriment. And so that's going to take a lot of education, a lot of patience, a lot of self-love, right? If you don't know something, allow yourself to be corrected, because we all have to do it. We are all victim of this oppressive system, and we've all fallen victim to whiteness. And so our job is to unlearn all that shit and be the best people we can be.
Yeah, we have work to do.
Yeah.
I want to shift gears just a little bit. And I want to talk about your role in Orange is the New Black. You played Maritza Ramos. In Orange is the New Black is the show about women in prison. And it highlights the many flaws with the criminal justice system, but also the many layers of the women who end up in this system. And mm-hmm. I particularly want to talk about the last season of the show, where you go into the storyline of the immigration detention facilities and the machine that is this for-profit detention of immigrants that, if you thought prison was bad, this really highlighted how much worse it is in there.
Here they are.
It's so quiet.
They are much more docile compared to Max. Our red uniforms are for level 2, people with felony convictions, etc. Orange are our level 1s, our non-criminals.
So they're in orange, but they're not criminals?
Well, they are criminals. They're here, right? They came to our country illegally.
That's exactly right, Carlos.
So I'm curious to know sort of the behind the scenes conversations when you learned that the writers and the producers wanted to go this route. What was happening behind the scenes that maybe you can share with us a little bit and why that mattered?
I mean, it mattered because if they didn't address it, then that would mean that they were tone deaf, right? Mm-hmm. Not addressing the systemic issues that we have, to me, is such a disservice. And so that's why Orange is the New Black is such an incredible show, why I'm so proud to be a part of it, is because there's no way that they could have talked about mass incarceration and as it affects different people and across different genders and class and race without mentioning detention centers and ICE. It was what was happening in the moment, and it's still happening, right? We were seeing families separated at the borders. We were seeing children put into cages. We've seen all these atrocities of abuse and, of course, of dehumanization. And so I'm so happy that we decided to share that story and that story was also told through my character, which I was so happy about because I really think that the audience deserved a story like this, so that we can continue this conversation. That's why we're artists. That's why we're telling these stories, so that we can move the needle forward, so that we can make things better.
I need to get in touch with someone so that I can prove that I was born here. I'm gonna ask for my phone call.
You don't get a phone call.
But there are phones right there.
You don't get a free call. You gotta pay to set up an account. You gotta pay per minute.
Okay, well, fuck that. When I get assigned my lawyer, that's the first thing I'm gonna do.
You don't get a lawyer.
What? This is America.
Not in here.
What we portrayed on Orange isn't half of the evil that is going on in these detention centers. And the need to continue telling these stories is so that we can humanize these folks. The fact that they're being dehumanized in these detention centers and by the way that they treat our families, there's also dehumanization in the stories that we tell, especially when we don't tell the full truths, and especially when we don't have the people who are living these experiences telling the stories.
I think that's something that's been talked about a lot, and it's the representation on screen and not just having more Latinos or more immigrants on screen, but being seen as a full person, as a three-dimensional character, and looking really at what it means to be an immigrant and what it means to be Latinx in this country right now. So I know that you've been involved in some campaigns to try to make sure that that's a focus of writers and directors when they're writing movies or TV shows. So where do you see where we are now? I'm sure you've seen some gains when it comes to representation, but what are you seeing as what's working, what's not working right now?
What's not working is not having representation throughout the entire industry, right? I mean, if we continue not having enough writers of color, people of color making decisions, or even behind the camera, from the gaffer, from the lighting person, from the just across the board, if you're not seeing representation, then the people telling our stories, the reality is they have a limited view or a limited approach to our lives. And that's why it's important for us to be represented across the board. It's not enough to just have Latinx talent or like one que otro, you know, Latinx family story. You're telling me you're only producing one Latinx story a year, like or four, and then, oh, sorry, we didn't pick it up. We were not able to show it because there's not enough support. Well, you need to be producing more then so that at least more than one get a shot. It's not at all where it needs to be. The industry is still quite oppressive, and it needs to change. Now, that's not to say that I'm not grateful for the roles that I've had to, that I've had a chance to play, but I've had to fight for that, and I've had to be very vocal. So I think if anything that I've learned is that you ain't gonna get anything unless you demand it, and understand that we belong here, and that our stories do deserve to be told, and there should be inclusion in all areas. And I don't want just your, you know, chief diversity and inclusive officer and have that be a person of color. I mean, across the board, decision makers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
You've been listening to actor, author, and activist Diane Guerrero speaking with Mother Jones's Fernanda Echavarri. Their conversation was live streamed last week, and you can watch the whole thing on our Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube pages. Coming up, Diane talks about the administration's efforts to end asylum at the border and gets personal about why she decided to use her platform and her fame for activism. That's after the break. Stay with us. And hey, if you want to support the Mother Jones podcast during these perilous times, it is easy. It's the one thing in the world right now that's easy. All you got to do is go to wherever you're listening to this podcast and subscribe. Thanks. The Mother Jones stories you're hearing right now are brought to you by our listeners and loyal readers who fuel our work. Audience support makes up 2/3 of the Mother Jones budget and helps our team dig deep on stories that matter. Make a donation at motherjones.com/give to keep our nonprofit newsroom humming. Again, that's motherjones.com/give. Hey, welcome back to the Mother Jones podcast. On today's episode, we're bringing you the latest in our live broadcast series, Mother Jones. This time, an engaging conversation with Diane Guerrero. My colleague Fernanda Echavarri is going to pick up the conversation talking about how COVID-19 has hit immigration detention centers where more than 20,000 people are held across the country. Here's Fernanda.
We have seen, as far as what ICE is reporting, there's been more than 800 cases of people who've tested positive for COVID-19. There's certain places like Eloy, Adelanto. The people in those facilities are so desperate and so anxious. And there's no, I mean, these places are notoriously known for having terrible healthcare, even on a good day. Like if some of us think it's bad to go through this with government assistance, the undocumented community has just been hit so hard with this pandemic. In a way, and you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but in a way it sort of highlights the just huge difference of what life is like when you are a citizen or not. I think that, yeah, this pandemic has really brought those disparities into sort of the very, very, very front and center of this pandemic. So I want to like just hear from you about maybe a little too philosophical, but the meaning of being a citizen, because you can be a citizen by contributing to your community. You work, you live here, you have family here, but when it comes to that relief check, you're not. And sort of what that means.
That means that we have a huge responsibility. And we've seen in our communities that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you have that paper, the citizenship card, the green card. It doesn't matter. They will take your mom. They will take your dad. They would put them in a disgusting detention center, and leave you out cold. It doesn't matter what kind of citizenship you have. So it is our responsibility to continue fighting for that respect, for our rights. Because we contribute so much, because we are human beings, and because we belong here. So I wanted to mention really quick, some of the things that we also should be doing is understanding where our dollars are going, right? Mm-hmm. There are so many organizations and companies out there that are using our consumer dollars to continue funding detention and continue putting bodies in there for profit. So understand how your dollars are contributing to private prisons and companies that are in line with the privatization of prison and that is making it possible to continue abusing our community.
I'm seeing a question here now that is related to this from Sean on Facebook. So I'll ask you that. Diane, you say you need to create a brand new immigration system. Do you have any ideas for what that would look like? Big question.
We need to invest. Right now we have 480, and I'm reading my notes here, $480 million in federal funding from ICE to organizations like GEO, right? These are the people who are responsible for making these detention centers happen and making sure that our people are not free and making sure that we continue on this terrible system. We need to get imaginative. We need to envision a world without detention. We need to invest that $480 million plus billions of dollars into our communities, into community-led programs. We know that over-policing and detention centers equal death. So why not let our community heal us in the way that it needs to heal us? So by investing that money into community organizers, and I'm sure, and I know that there is more imagination here than what this administration and what this world has made us believe. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know. I know that we need an update of the visa system. I know that this system is designed to keep Black and brown people out. I know that. So let's change that. And there are plenty of people out there who have great ideas, and we should start by taking the evil folks out and putting in people that have amazing ideas and who care about humanity and who care about people.
I think on the keeping people out, this administration has succeeded in doing that. This administration has tried every single route to close the door on asylum at the border and asylum in the United States as we know it. This is something that was set up after World War II to give people refuge in this country who need it. And it really has sort of shifted the conversation of what it means for the United States to be the place where people came asking for help. And we've shut the door on them. So on the vein of imagining things, what does a U.S. that embraces asylum seekers look like to you?
Well, I would say start by acknowledging the damage and the hurt and the pain that this country has caused other countries, right? I mean, if we think about asylum seekers, those are people that are displaced. Those are people where their resources and their resources have been depleted, or their governments have been destabilized, that the U.S. has personally contributed to. That would be first, right? Understanding that we understand our history and take that into acknowledgement, because if we don't acknowledge how we are part of the problem, how we have been part of the problem, then we can't find a solution. When we criminalize people for seeking asylum, we're saying, we don't care that we went in there and blew up your city. We don't care if we went in there and destabilized your economy. We don't care if we helped bring about some tyrant or some oppressive leader to your country. We're saying, we don't care that we did these atrocities. I think we can start by saying, we care. We understand, we acknowledge, we hear you. It's time for reparations.
That is all very tied to a lot of the, at least what I see you do and talk about in social media. And I think that the activism part of sort of the role that you've taken on over the last few years, you really have used your platform, whether it's sitting on a couch on a like late night talk show or on your own social media. And I just want to learn a little bit about sort of how that started or why do this? Why bring these conversations that maybe in the Hollywood scene may seem a little bit uncomfortable to some people and why you do it?
Because I can't continue living in a world like this. I can't continue to smile and say, it's okay. Thank you. I can't live like that anymore. I can't continue to see people murdered. I can't continue to see people suffering in this way and to have this privilege and to be able to have this platform. And I'm not saying everyone needs to assume this responsibility, but as a woman of color, as a Latinx woman, I see it as something very personal in my journey and in my purpose. I've seen injustice since I was a kid in my community. I've been seeing injustice when I was in school and I saw kids that were hungry. I saw injustice when my mom would be pulled over and with her broken English would be made fun of and demeaned by police officers. I've seen injustice by my family being abducted by immigration services. I've seen my niece go to jail. And so I don't want that life anymore. And so I'm going to continue doing this work and keep on trying. I understand that this is a lifelong work. And if anyone interested in getting themselves involved really needs to understand that this is lifelong. And we have to continue fighting. But certainly when we see revolutions such as this one, it is time to activate. It is time to not forget about all that troubles you, not push away to the side your hurt and your pain, but see it as a chance for healing, because that's what our community needs. That's what our world needs, is healing. And I can't see any other way of healing than participating and getting involved.
What makes you hopeful?
What makes me hopeful? I mean, everything that we're doing, everything that I see going on, our revolution is an act of hope. Mm. Our hope is an act of revolution. Mm. I'm excited to see people more interested in this. I'm excited for people holding each other accountable. I'm excited to see all this learning that's happening. It's so important for the type of transformative justice that we need and that we want. I'm just happy. I'm happy that I'm aware. I'm happy that I know we have to unlearn like all of these lies that we've been taught, that we're not enough, that we don't have any power, that we can't change anything. And that's simply not true. We can. We are enough. We can change. And we belong.
Diane, I am so thankful for your time. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and maybe next time we can do this in person.
Absolutely. I love Mother Jones. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Diane, and bye.
Bye.
That was Diane Guerrero talking with Mother Jones reporter Fernanda Chavity. You can check out the full conversation on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter.
I'm Molly Schwartz, and I'm a digital media fellow in the New York City office. Right now, I'm working on a story about racism in reality television. Here are the credits for today's show. Theme music for the Mother Jones podcast was composed by Micah Barrick at Hear Film. A big thank you to the Mother Jones events team for making this show possible, Liliana Miramontes, as well as Jackie Flynn Mogensen and Sam Van Pikeren from the social team. The live stream was directed by Mark Helenowski. This episode was produced by Fernanda Echavri, a reporter here at Mother Jones, and James West, our executive producer, with additional production by me, Molly Schwartz. And credit where credit is due, Mother Jones is supported by you, our listeners and readers, so thanks.
That's it this week for the Mother Jones podcast. I'm your host, Jamila King. Again, if you want to do one easy thing right now, and nothing is easy, everything is really hard, trust me, I know. But this, I promise you, is very easy. Just subscribe to the Mother Jones podcast. It's really easy and it's really helpful for us. Just go to wherever you're listening to this episode and hit that subscribe button. I'll see you next week. This podcast is brought to you by Mother Jones listeners like you who donate to keep our newsroom buzzing. Help us stay on the beat. Go to motherjones.com/give. From PRX.